Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
She never thought of herself as sensitive. If anything, she believed she was practical, cautious in certain places, sure, but not someone who went looking for meaning in every strange sensation. There were locations that unsettled her, places where she felt an overwhelming urge to leave, but she assumed that was instinct, nothing more. Looking back, though, those instincts had always been specific. As a child, her father was a pastor in a small town, known for handling difficult cases, people who came to him when things had gone far beyond normal counseling. Many of them were deeply troubled. Some struggled with addiction. Some believed themselves cursed. A number of them came from local Native American communities carrying stories of generational trauma and spiritual fear. Her father performed exorcisms, not loudly, not theatrically, quietly, methodically, behind closed doors. There was one room in the church she avoided at all costs, her father's study, and she couldn't explain why. She only knew that stepping inside it made her skin prickle. The air felt wrong, thick, heavy, cold. On Sundays, when she needed a book to read during services, she would force herself inside just long enough to grab one, her heart racing, hair standing on end, then sprint out as if something might follow. She never told anyone. Years later, her mother entered that room alone and emerged shaken. She told the family there was something in there, something dark. Together, her parents prayed and performed what they believed was a cleansing. After that, the room felt different, lighter. At the time, she told herself it was coincidence. Her childhood home wasn't the only place that unsettled her. There was an old bridge near another town she lived in, a place she always ran across without knowing why. A boarding house with narrow hallways where she refused to be alone in the dark. Lights were turned off upstairs, followed by frantic dashes down the stairs. In that house, she cried constantly. Not from fear, from sadness. She was a depressed child without a clear reason. Nights were the worst. She felt watched, suffocated, desperate to escape. School became her refuge, not for learning, but for relief. Her family fought constantly, screaming matches, violence, emotional chaos that felt unavoidable. Years later, her mother would claim not to understand why everyone had been so angry all the time. When her parents split, everything changed. She moved in with her grandmother, a kind woman in a quiet, ordinary house. For the first time, she felt safe. Calm, happy. Nothing followed her there. No chills, no shadows, no crushing sadness. She graduated, joined the military, was sent overseas. That was when the sadness returned. At first, she blamed isolation, stress, distance from home. She began drinking heavily, numbing herself without realizing how quickly it had become routine. Then one day, her roommate, a strange, blunt woman, told her something that stuck. "Your energy is filthy," she said. "Appalling." Against her better judgment, she let the woman clean it. Whatever that meant, it worked. She lost the desire to drink. She felt lighter, healthier. She fell in love, lost weight, married, experienced happiness she hadn't known was possible. Then she moved to Washington, D.C. Within 6 months, she fell out of love with her husband. Not gradually, instantly. Drinking crept back in, slowly at first, then completely. Their marriage ended. She entered rehab voluntarily in 2008, desperate to regain control. It was after she got sober that she noticed something else. She had recently started collecting antiques, beautiful pieces meant to make the house feel warm, established, timeless. Instead, the nights became unbearable. Sleep evaded her. The walk-in closet felt oppressive, as if something waited there when she wasn't looking. Then the activity started. One night she woke to loud banging. Her cat slept beside her, unmoving. She rushed to the bathroom to find every bottle she owned, shampoo, conditioner, soap, neatly piled into the bathtub. 8 or 9 items gathered together. Another night, she lay awake as scratching erupted across her bedroom furniture. Not from one place, from everywhere. Nightstands, dressers, wood surfaces vibrating with sound. She fled to the couch and didn't sleep. She drank to avoid going home. She drank to avoid feeling. Then came the relapse. She lay in bed at the end of that weekend, sober again, but hollow. A deep cold pressed against her body, as if something had curled beside her. Her chest tightened. Sorrow flooded her so completely that the thought of ending her life felt disturbingly logical. She got up. She called her boss. She was scared. Her boss told her to come in immediately. By chance, the same friend who had cleaned her energy years earlier was now stationed nearby. That friend insisted she move in with her for the remaining months. The peace was immediate, no cold and no sadness, no urge to drink. Later, she returned overseas to a ship that remained deployed most of the year. On board, she slept perfectly, no sensations, no fear. But when the ship came home, her house welcomed her back with cold. The cold never greeted her at the door. That was the unsettling part. It waited. Sometimes it came while she was drying her hair, sometimes when she lay still in bed. Eyes open, listening to the quiet. Other times it arrived without warning, an invisible wave that rolled through her body, raising goosebumps so intense they ached. When it came, she knew it immediately. Not because she saw anything, because her body reacted before her mind could. She began to understand its patterns only after she stopped denying them. On the ship, she was fine, calm, rested, clear-headed. At home, the feeling returned within hours, sometimes minutes. She tried to explain it away, stress, conditioning, memory, but the consistency was impossible to ignore. The house wasn't haunted. She was sure of that. The activity didn't feel anchored to walls or rooms the way classic hauntings did. It moved, followed, watched. The cold sensation traveled with her from room to room, lingering just behind her shoulder. As if whatever it was preferred to stay slightly out of reach. She noticed something else, too. It intensified when she felt weak, lonely, tempted to drink. On nights when she resisted the urge, or as when she sat on the couch, sober, determined, the sorrow crept in heavier, crushing, unreasonable. She would cry for hours without knowing why, her chest tight, thoughts spiraling toward fears that didn't feel like her own. Dying alone, failing, being unworthy of peace. She tried to leave the house when it got bad, tried to go to the gym, tried to distract herself. More than once, she turned the car around halfway there, sobbing so hard she couldn't see the road. The last time the ship returned home, the cold didn't just follow. She felt it move with her through the house, down the hallway, into the kitchen, back into the bedroom. When it came close, the chills were painful, sharp and deep like ice pressed against bone. Her muscles tensed involuntarily. Her heart raced. She felt watched with an intensity that made it hard to breathe. Then the object moved. She had been lying on the couch, unable to sleep. An ottoman sat across the room, decorative birdcage resting on top. She watched it lift. Not tip, lift. It flew off violently, crashing into the floor several feet away. She froze, heart pounding, eyes locked on it. Then it jerked again, harder this time, as if kicked by an unseen force skidding across the floor and into the kitchen. No windows open, no pets, no vibration, just force. She didn't scream, didn't run. She stood up calmly, got dressed, and left the house. She slept on the ship that night without a single disturbance. That was when the thought finally surfaced. What if it wasn't the house? She began replaying everything in her mind, not just recent events, but years of them. The sudden shift after sobriety, the timeline of her drinking, the antiques. She had started collecting them right before the house changed. Beautiful pieces, old, heavy with history, candle holders, furniture, decorative items meant to make the place feel rooted and warm. Instead, they seemed to deepen the cold. She asked a friend, someone open-minded, spiritual but grounded, to come over. Together they saged the house. As they moved from room to room, the cold slammed into him so hard he stopped walking. "I feel it," he said quietly. "This is strong." They loaded the antiques into her car to dispose of them. The cold followed. Inside the vehicle, her skin prickled violently, both of them shivering despite the heat. It didn't ease until the items were gone, dumped, abandoned, removed. Only then did the sensation fade. The ride home was quiet. Normal. That night, friends came over. No one felt anything. She laughed for the first time in weeks. The next night, she returned home alone. The cold hit her like a wall. Stronger than before, angrier. It stayed close, circling her movements, clinging to her back. She sensed something else now, not just sadness, but mockery. Awareness, as if whatever had been displaced wasn't gone, only irritated. She went to the bathroom. Every square of toilet paper lay unraveled on the floor. The entire roll, stripped down to the cardboard core, neatly piled, waiting, she snapped. Threatened the empty room, raised her voice, demanded it leave. Nothing happened. She didn't sleep. She returned to the ship again. Now fear settled in. For real. She thought of her family history. A grandfather, an uncle, both lost to alcoholism. The pull, the despair, the sense of something feeding on weakness, waiting patiently through generations. She wondered if one of them lingered, or if something else had simply learned her patterns. She was in Japan now, far from home. No English-speaking clergy, no familiar support. She read about rituals late at night, scrolling through forums and half-forgotten methods, terrified of doing the wrong thing. She didn't want to anger it. She didn't know if she was strong enough to confront it. And worse than the cold, worse than the fear, was the growing certainty that whatever had attached itself to those objects hadn't arrived with them. They had only given it permission. Once the idea settled in her mind, it refused to leave. The antiques hadn't brought it into her life. They had only given it a place to lean. That realization changed everything. On the ship, surrounded by steel, routine, and constant human presence, she felt normal, not just safe, herself. The sadness didn't cling. The cold didn't find her. Sleep came easily. Sobriety didn't feel like a battle there. It felt natural. But the moment she returned home, it was waiting, not rushing her, not attacking outright, watching. She started keeping notes, not because she wanted proof for anyone else, but because she needed to understand it for herself when the cold came, how long it lasted, what she had been thinking or feeling just before it arrived. Patterns emerged. It came hardest when she felt isolated, when she was tired, when she thought about drinking, not even when she drank, but when the idea crept in quietly, disguised as comfort. The cold seemed to bloom from those moments, swelling outward, wrapping around her shoulders like a presence that knew her too well, that frightened her more than flying objects ever had, because it meant the thing didn't need to scare her into submission. It only needed patience. She remembered her childhood then, not the fear, but the atmosphere. The house with the pastor father. The study no one entered. The way her body reacted before her mind ever caught up. The sorrow she carried as a child with no reason, crying at night, desperate to leave home, counting hours until school, the violence, the shouting, the emotional chaos. Places like that left doors open. Not spiritual doors, necessarily, but emotional ones. Vulnerabilities that never fully closed. She began to suspect the entity didn't care about antiques, rituals, or houses. It cared about her. Not in a possessive way. Not even malicious in the way horror movies depicted. It cared because she was useful, sensitive enough to notice it, fragile enough at the right moments to feed it, strong enough to survive without collapsing completely. The idea unsettled her deeply, but it also gave her clarity. She stopped threatening it, stopped acknowledging it out loud. She focused instead on grounding herself in the present. Routine, light, sound, people. She kept music playing at home, slept with lamps on, spoke to friends on the phone when the sadness crept in, even when she didn't tell them why. And slowly, almost imperceptibly, the cold lost its edge. It still came, but it didn't linger as long. She realized something else, too. It never followed her out of the house when she left by choice, only when she fled, only when fear drove her away. That mattered. She began reclaiming small spaces, sitting in the living room a few minutes longer than she wanted to, standing still when the chill brushed past her instead of running, letting it pass through without reacting. The pain dulled. The mockery faded. One night, weeks later, she sat on the couch and felt the cold approach, hesitant this time, lighter, less sure of itself. Her skin prickled, but the despair didn't come. No thoughts of drinking, no sense of hopelessness, just the cold. And then, nothing. It receded. That was when she understood the final truth. Whatever this was, spirit, echo, attachment, parasite, it thrived on imbalance, on cycles, on the push and pull between control and collapse. It wasn't haunting her house. It was testing her boundaries, and for the first time in her life, she held them. She didn't perform a ritual, didn't attempt a cleansing she wasn't prepared for. She didn't challenge it, name it, or try to banish it with words she didn't fully believe in. She simply refused to feed it. The house still felt quiet now, sometimes too quiet, but it felt hers again. But she knows this much. It no longer owns her sadness. It no longer controls her sobriety. And it no longer dictates where she can sleep. Some people inherit houses. Some inherit trauma. And some, through no fault of their own, inherit something that learns them over time. The difference she's learned isn't whether the thing exists. It's whether you let it decide who you become.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.